The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What a game. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Thank you for being with us. Look who's here. Super Bowl champ on our screen, Jeff Saturday. Jeff, always good to see you. Max, Stephen A. I'm Molly Karam. What? Are you mad because he's going to correct
I mean, do I have to look at Jeff this early? Do I have to look at Jeff? No, I usually get to see him at around 11 o'clock. I got to deal with him at the top of the show. He came here to mess with me this early.
You know it, Stephen A. That's right. That's right.
And by the way, get ready, baby.
You just took a little shot.
I'm always ready. I'm always ready. And by the way, Max and Molly, especially you, Molly, I got a text this morning. Now, I lost a bet 2 years ago. And Mr. Rose, as in Jalen Rose, texts me to remind him that I owe him a pair of sneakers, which he is right about. That's how my morning started.
Well,
I had to hear Max's voice first.
You got enough money to pay
Then I had
for
to
it.
Hear Jalen Rose reminding me of a bet that I lost. And now I got Jeff Saturday. And damn it, it ain't even 10:02. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Listen,
everyone feels very sorry for you, Stephen A. You have a very tough life.
Yeah. Stephen A., why don't you pick up some his and hers? I'm a size 8.5. I won't be mad at you. Christmas is right around the corner.
I got you. I got you, balance. Molly. For you, I will do
I
that.
I believe you.
I will do that.
I believe you. I do. All right,
size
fellas. Max, I know you were watching, as Stephen A. would say, with your Beetlejuice eyes, because Tom Brady did not look like himself. The Rams get the win. Tom, talk to us.
You've come up with so many game-winning drives in the fourth quarter and overtime, Tom. So on a night like this, how disappointed are you in yourself?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's a good word, disappointed, and I have to do a better job. Absolutely. We've had some chances, definitely, and receivers are doing a great job, and I got to get them the ball. So I got to figure out how to do that.
All right, Stephen A., tell me this. After last night, do you still trust Tom Brady?
I do. I don't like what I saw last night. I'll be the first to admit that. But when we talk about whether I trust him or not, I'm going to go to somebody's body of work as opposed to, you know, what they've done in the immediate moment. I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment when it comes to Tom Brady. Certainly, he was overthrowing receivers. Certainly, that he's leading the league in incompletions with 20-plus yards. I think he's got about 33 incompletions on the year. We know that's not impressive. He's completed about 25% of his passes for 15 or 20 yards plus. So we get all of that. We understand it. And when you've got Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Gronkowski, and of course Brady, and of course Antonio Brown, there is simply no excuse for it. Tom Brady's got to get his act together, because the losses that he has incurred this season has been a bit against top quality teams. But what I would remind everybody is that he's supposed to have a veteran coach in Bruce Arians that would ask him to stop throwing those damn things. Why don't you throw some intermediate passes? Why don't you run the damn football? You've got Ronald Jones. You've got Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette is no slouch. You got him there for a reason. Engage in some ball control. Move the chains. Run the damn football, for crying out loud. It's not just the receivers that are out there with your 43-year-old quarterback. It's those running backs as well. Take some of that pressure off of Tom Brady. And, oh, by the way, I'm not going to let the defense off the hook. I know numbers-wise, they're one of the top defenses in the league, led by Todd Bowles, who obviously is a stout defensive coordinator. But two of the days where they really, really wet the bed was when they got blown out by New Orleans. And then last night, again, no pressure on Jared Goff whatsoever. He sat back, took pictures, called this lady, said, I'm coming. What time you want dinner tonight? Let's hang out afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there was just no pressure whatsoever. I mean, he was standing back there taking pictures, for crying out loud. So I look at all of those things and I'm saying, this is the ultimate team sport, is it not? It's football. It's not just one side of the ball. It's three sides of the ball. Special teams. It's defense. It's offense. It's also not just a quarterback. It's your head coach. It's your offensive coordinator. This is about the third time this year. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff Saturday. This is about the third time this year, at least, that we have looked at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and said schematically, We are not impressed with the game that's been called by Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich. We're not impressed. And so somehow, some way, they've got to get it together. The question is, do you trust that Tom Brady will? And I'm saying, even at 43, with these multitude of weapons, with what I've seen him do in good moments this year, I believe that when it's time, he will show up. You're going to have to show me differently. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe otherwise.
When we ask the question, do you still trust Tom Brady? We mean in the moment of truth, game on the line. Here's the ball. Yep. You got a minute left or something like that. Are you going to lead him down the field? That's really what we're talking about, because I have acknowledged Tom Brady can still play quarterback. At his age, it's remarkable. And yes, he has weapons all around him. Whatever you want to say about Bruce Arians right now, Bruce Arians is a well-respected and good NFL head coach, right? I know it's saying Bruce Arians is no good, or that people don't respect Bruce Arians. He has a solid reputation. So, look, do you still trust Tom Brady? They really needed a win last year in New England against Miami on the, you know, in the last game week of the season. Last game of the season, they needed that win in Miami so they could have a bye in the first round, so they could have home field. They lost to Miami. They lost to the team they needed to beat in their division. How often has that happened to the Patriots on the last game of the, in the last game of the season? And you can say what you want. Tom Brady didn't have weapons and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, he had a defense. He had a great head coach. So you can't point there. Yeah, you have to also look at Brady. They didn't get it done, and Brady didn't get it done. This year so far, there have been some critical games against, obviously, their chief divisional rivals. They've lost them badly the second time. Against Chicago, right? Brady gets the ball back with, you know, Nick Foles hit that receiver for the first down when he needed to. They kicked the field goal. Uh-oh, they left too much time for Tom Brady. Oh, boy, you gave Tom Brady the ball with time on the clock. Here it comes. No, it didn't. He had tough throws to make, it's true, but he didn't make them. And then he had a mental breakdown. Now, do I trust Tom Brady to rebound, to lead his team, to make sure they clean up the errors from the week before? Yeah, I trust him in that way. But I think we're talking about more than that. We're talking about the great Tom Brady, who, here it is, the moment of truth, go get it done. I haven't seen him do that in a while when they need him most. And, you know, the reasons are obvious. He's old now. And you can point to his head coach. I mean, come on, you can't always point fingers. Last year he didn't have weapons in New England, but he had the greatest head coach of all time. He had an elite defense, and he had a system he knew extremely well, and an offensive coordinator and all that. This year he has every weapon you could imagine. Did you see Mike Evans after the catch yesterday? Like, the kind of, like, he has weapons he doesn't even know what to do with. He has so many weapons, and he has a defense. Now we're pointing to the head coach. No. Tom Brady, once upon a time, had a huge kind of advantage in decision-making. The league has caught up in that way. But as it's caught up, there are lots of quarterbacks who don't make bad decisions constantly anymore, right? Like, that has gotten better in the league, and it's coincided with his physical deterioration just because of age. He's not, and a league where quarterbacks can do much more now, physically. So I don't think it's fair to today, the day after that game, the way it ended, and by the way, it's not like it was a scoring fest. 27-24 is like a regular NFL score. I don't think you can point to the defense either. I don't think it's fair today to point fingers at people other than Tom Brady first. I think it's Brady, and I don't trust him in those moments like I used to.
You know, when you think about Tom Brady and the opportunity he had last night, like you said, under 2 minutes on the clock, you get the ball, you got a chance to go down, tie, or win the football game. You know, what are the expectations? I think as you look at it, he did not show what we've expected of Tom Brady, right? The overthrow to Brady, it wasn't even close. And I think the concern for me is, I thought Stephen A. did a good job of bringing up the numbers. The offense and what's being asked of Tom Brady, like, what are they truly asking him to do? And he's leading the league in incompletions of 20 yards and further and all those kinds of things. But it's because of what's being asked. So his eyes are now taking him into much more dangerous throws than he would have tried to attempt in New England. If you think about all of those drives, that happened at the end of games. Think about how many dinks and dunks really occurred as they moved the ball down. It was very possession related. And this is not the way the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are constructed. So when you're trying to place blame or whatever we're trying to do in the conversation, I don't think it just lies at the feet of Tom Brady. I think he's trying to do what he's being coached to do. The disconnect for me is it's showing that he's not capable of making the throws that you are now demanding of him. And not just because of last night. If you proceed earlier in the season, like this is a common theme, right? If he, I think before last night, he was 1 of 13 in the last couple games of 15 plus yard type throws. This is concerning. And here's the other part, is that when you're asking him to make those deep throws, the offensive line is not keeping the pocket clean enough where he can step up. And the book on every pocket passer is, if you make him reset or move his feet, take his eyes down, they're not the same quarterback. And that's been true since day one. So you're seeing kind of all of the kryptonite kind of get thrown at him at one time, asking him to do some things, not being quite protected. And listen, the one area I can say, Stephen A., that I fully agree is no run game. Like, at some point, if you're getting that much pressure, and it started the first drive, like Brockers was back there smacking Tom Brady at like play 2 and 3, you know that's going to rattle him. Mm-hmm. But you never got, you never just took the ball and ran it at him. That's concerning for me, because at some point you do have to take the pressure off, and there's a ton of blame. The receivers got beat up by the defensive backs of the Rams. The front four of the Rams dominated the offensive line. So there's a lot to go around. Not placing blame, but I do have concern that can Tom Brady do what's being asked of him? Again, some type of common sense has to come in. I mean, let's liken it back to Peyton Manning in Denver. There were things that you saw him become limited of doing, and so they made some change. I haven't seen the changes yet.
Hey.
That's the issue for me.
Hey, Jeff, you know, for future reference, I want you to know that I've noticed something very slick about you. You're brilliant with your football analysis, but I think that you go on a little bit longer because you don't want me to get at you. I know that strategy. Max tries to employ it. It doesn't work with me. It doesn't work with me, Jeff Saturday.
I'm just letting you know that.
That's number one.
That's
number one. Number two.
This from the guy who invented ball control.
Hell no. That's number one. Number two, Jeff is right. Tampa Bay hasn't rushed for more than 90 yards in more than half of their games. And number three, are we just going to ignore the fact that the Buccaneers defense gave 23 catches and 275 yards to the Rams' two top receivers?
Yeah.
275 yards?
You're right.
The
two receivers, damn.
Let me take it here, though, guys, because I want to focus on the Rams. So Russell Wilson and Tom Brady have combined for 5 turnovers against this Rams defense. Let's stay with them. They're now tied for top in the division with Seattle. We know the NFC West is the best division in the league. Stephen A., are the Rams your NFC favorites at this point?
No, they deserve to be, but I'm not going with it. I'm not going to jump off my bandwagon, even though I don't like the way the Bucs looked against the Saints, of course, and I certainly don't like what I saw last night. I believe in Tom Brady, and I'm not going to jump off that bandwagon. I think that when it really, really counts, the Rams' offense is going to let them down. The defense will shine. The offense will let them down. You see, yesterday, when the last thing you needed was a turnover and Jared Goff threw that interception, this is the kind of stuff that happens. I don't believe in the Rams' offense to that degree. I believe in their defense, not their offense. I'm a roll with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm still not going to jump off that bandwagon. I can't argue with anybody that would pick the Saints after what the Saints did to them twice this year. I can't argue with that. I just refuse to believe that the Saints would beat them 3 times in the same season. I don't see Tom Brady losing to one opponent on 3 separate occasions in the same year. With the Rams, I got questions about their offense. That's why I'm sticking with the Bucs, even though right now I can understand why anybody would say otherwise.
Hold up. You don't see Tom Brady losing to the same opponent 3 times in the same year. That would be one thing if it was going in the right direction. If it was trending in the right direction, Tom Brady barely loses, or Tom Brady gets blown out by Breeze and the Saints, and then as they're gaining momentum and everything, now it's a close game. And so you have reason to believe next time it'll be different. It went the other way, brother. It was like neither team looked that good. You can understand Tom Brady just got there and all that. And then the next time they linked up, it wasn't the same. And by the way, the Saints are – if this is all assuming Breeze gets back, if he gets back, what the injury will have meant likely is that he got some time off. Think about Drew Brees recently in the playoffs. He's looked beaten up, worn down. He's looked old, right? He's looked fatigued. Not if he has several weeks off, especially 4, 5, 6 weeks off. Taysom Hill looked pretty good. Looks like they can keep their heads above water while they're waiting for Breeze. Then Breeze comes back. I've mentioned repeatedly in recent years, the Saints against the run have been the most consistent of the dynamic offensive teams, right? Year in and year out, they're pretty good there for a team with a dynamic offense. But the offense got more dynamic, at least on paper, with Emmanuel Sanders, a real number two receiver. The defense got better, again, at least on paper, and it's paying dividends already, with the Quan Alexander trade, who's a good player. They were able to get him because of his contract, not because he can't play. He's good. And the Saints' defense just got better. Look at what they just did. I know it's against the Falcons, but their defense looked tremendous this week. So if you're looking at the NFC and you don't like the Rams, Stephen A., because of Goff, and I'm kind of with you there, actually, you're not taking against the Saints because you think Brady's not going to lose three times to the Saints when the second beating was worse than the first. It's New Orleans.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's got to be New Orleans. And I've been a Bucs apologist the entire season, but what was shown last night, the reason it's so concerning is because of one of the things Stephen A. said. I wish I had the mute button. I could have stopped him, you know, right then and jumped in on the defense of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. When you challenge Jared Goff to beat you, and he does, that concerns me, right? Because if you look at this offense and what they're capable of doing, and you talk about the vaunted Bucs defense and how they were going to hang their hat on that, and last night, I get the turnovers because Goff will give you a couple, but two receivers completely controlled the game, and not just making catches, but yards after the catch. So what does that mean? That means the front four of the Buccaneers couldn't impose its will. When you flipped it over, the Rams' defensive line definitely imposed its will. So when you take it to the Saints' defensive line will impose its will against that Tampa Bay offensive line as well. So Drew Brees coming back, obviously, is the starting point. He has to come back. I will say this about the Rams. The one thing that is encouraging about the Rams is when you talk about when Goff is called to make the plays, this could be the game that you look back on and go, man, this is a defining moment in this guy's career. Going into Tampa Bay, being challenged to do it, absolutely no resemblance of a run game, and he put it on his shoulders, and they won. And listen, whether it's 2 receivers, 10 receivers, I really don't care. He played to the level to beat a very good defense and an offense being run by Tom Brady. That's a pretty big deal. So this could be a feather in the cap type game for Jared Goff and the encouragement of him moving forward. But, man, that Saints team, boy, it's looking stacked just like Max said.
One thing that I would say before we end this is that Max – you know, you're not seeing where I'm coming from in this regard. The fact that they look so bad, to me, is what would motivate them to really, really correct the error of their ways. I'm talking about when they got blown out by the Saints. If it were 2 nail biters, I think you got a better chance of taking you got a better chance of sweeping, winning 3 straight. But when you blow out a Tom Brady team that's so loaded, I can't believe that they're that bad. When you get trounced 38-3, I think the next time they met New Orleans, they would be ready because they know they'll get annihilated if they're not.
Stephen A., what do you change? Like, you're asking a leopard to change his spots, right? So Bruce Arians and Leftwich are all of a sudden good? Because that's what's going to have to change. The ball can't challenge them down the field. That's a big change. That's like a philosophical change. I'm just not sure that's.
But it has to be. But you said it yourself.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Hold on.
And keep in mind,
but you
guys,
said it yourself, Jeff.
Keep in
you
mind.
Said it yourself. The great ones do that. What do we rave about with Bill Belichick? You go in, week out, about how to win that game, whatever it takes. Maybe Bruce Arians should steal a page from that.
Yeah, but Bruce Arians came back and said we had guys
Los
open.
Angeles.
You remember? Like he talked about, we've got guys open. Like, that's not a guy who seems like, right, Max, hey, man, we made some errors. This is a guy who thinks we're going to challenge him, and you don't see it go. I just don't see that right now.
Okay. This was a big-time showdown. Brady and them had to be totally prepared. They were playing a team that's had to travel back and forth across the country constantly. They were favorites. And when in the moment of truth, Brady couldn't get it done. Just like he couldn't get it done against Miami last year at the end of the season. Just like he couldn't get it done against the Saints twice this season. Just like he couldn't get it done in Chicago with a game on the line. Brady couldn't get it done. He has all the weapons in the world. I don't think you can point to Arians.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Let's talk NBA free agency. Here's what the champs have done since Friday. LA has brought in Dennis Schroeder, Montrezl Harrell, Wesley Matthews so far. Schroeder finished runner-up for Sixth Man of the Year last season, while Harrell was the winner of that award. And then Markieff Morris tweeting that he's returning to the Lakers. Marc Gasol is finalizing a deal, according to Woj. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is locked up as well. Max, all that being said, who is the biggest threat to the Lakers in the West?
I actually think, based on what I've seen so far in the offseason, where I think the Nuggets really didn't take a step forward, where I think the Clippers maybe got marginally better with the Ibaka signing, where I look around, obviously the Warriors are hobbled. I think it's the Mavericks if they stay healthy. Porzingis won't start the season because they're being very careful with his knee. But assuming that he is rested and healthy and he'll have most of a regular season to ramp up and to make sure he's in shape for the playoffs. In fact, he's going to play, like, especially considering the start date of the season, he's going to play the vast majority of the regular season, you know, knock wood. I look at that Mavericks series against the Clippers, and I thought the Clippers were lucky to get past them. The Mavericks, don't forget, the Clippers were lucky when Porzingis got ejected for something he shouldn't have been ejected for. They won that game, and then eventually Porzingis couldn't play, and they won out. But I thought the Mavericks were the better team based on what I saw, and when both teams were at full strength, they were better. And by the way, Luka Doncic is a superstar, and he's so young, he is likely to get better. There's actually room for improvement in his game. He can shoot the ball better. He takes a lot of threes. But he can shoot the ball better, and he looks like a shooter. Like, when he shoots the ball, you go, yeah, that looks good. I expect his shooting to get better, Stephen A., which is scary when you think about it. I expect his defense to get better because he's not a good defender, although maybe not quite as bad as his reputation at this point. When I look at Kleber and the roster surrounding these guys, they have, like, length. They have shooting. I think the Mavericks are the biggest threat to the Lakers if they are healthy.
I disagree with you. I think the number one threat to the Los Angeles Lakers, who are the clear by a, I don't want to say by a mile, but pretty damn close. The Los Angeles Lakers did their due diligence this offseason. They put in the work that nobody else in the Western Conference put in, which is inexplicable to me. And I think acquiring a guy like, you know, Montrezl Harrell, keeping Morris, adding what they added to the equation, trading what have you, I definitely think that the Los Angeles Lakers are the clear prohibitive favorite. Number two behind them would be the Los Angeles Clippers. As far as I'm concerned, the Dallas Mavericks improved defensively, but they've taken a step back offensively. I'm not a believer. The Denver Nuggets should not have lost Jeremy Grant. I don't know why he took $60 million from Detroit, but didn't take it from Denver. Doesn't seem to make much sense to me, even though I believe in Michael Porter Jr. I still think that the Denver Nuggets, in terms of their depth, I don't think they're the same team. I think the Los Angeles Clippers are the team to look out for. When you look at Harrell, Harrell was obviously the sixth man of the year. He was an energizer bunny off the bench, but he doesn't necessarily have Ibaka's game. Ibaka's got his size, his height, maybe even a little bit taller. He definitely has a better perimeter shot. He's a better rim protector as well in terms of, you know, blocking shots, if not rebounding. All of those things added to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and their motivation, having something to prove after getting bounced out the way that they did, I don't think enough can be said about that. I'm certainly not saying they're better than the Los Angeles Lakers because we know better. But when you look at the fact that they've got a new fresh voice in Ty Lue, who's anxious to prove some things, who knows a thing or two about how to coach LeBron James, let alone against him. Then you combine that with Kawhi Leonard, your best player in the world, Max, at least until he got bounced out by Denver. The bottom line is that when you consider all the things that they had to do to acquire Kawhi Leonard, if there is somebody that's got to step up and produce and shows that he was worth all the sacrifices they made to get him, it's him, Mr. Load Management himself. He is a great, great player, a top five talent in the league. But he ain't even in the top 20 when it comes to leadership. We all know that. Paul George is a star, but you can't be a superstar unless you show up when it really, really counts, which he has yet to prove. And I love the guy. But you combine those two with their talent, with the motivation, with Ty Lue and Serge Ibaka being added to that equation, I would say, even though they're not better than the Lakers, they're better than everybody else in the Western Conference when it really, really counts.
Know something? I like the offseason move of picking up Ibaka, especially on the deal they did, but he's not going to fix what you just said, Stephen A. I would be with you on the Clippers if I thought Paul George was a rise-to-the-occasion kind of guy. Now, Kawhi choked in Game 7, right? Like, he had a bad game, especially in the second half, but it was
odd because it's
so unlike
him.
What I'm saying is when you point to Paul George and talk about becoming a superstar instead of just an all-star,
okay,
you were the one who made a big deal about him hitting the side of the backboard, right? The acquisition of Serge Ibaka doesn't fix that in Paul George, who's really one of your centerpiece. Like, you have two centerpiece, right, cornerstone guys, Kawhi and Paul George. When I look at the Mavericks and I look at their cornerstone guys, Luka Doncic is a killer. And Kristaps Porzingis, give me Porzingis in the playoffs if he's healthy all day over Paul George in the playoffs especially. And then I mentioned the supporting cast, guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, right? Like, good long, they can defend, they can shoot. And they add Josh Richardson, a real 3-and-D kind of wing. They had a good offseason, especially considering it looked like they had limited resources. If they stay healthy, to me, the Mavericks have a top two that stack up with just about anyone. Even if you wanted to say, who's the best top two other than LeBron and AD this upcoming season, I anticipate that's going to be Luka and Porzingis, and they have a deep and effective supporting cast and a real coach. I really think it only matters. The health is really the only question for me. If they stay healthy, to me, that's the team.
Well, that's a big if because of Porzingis, and we know how fragile he is. Talented, but fragile. And when the game slows down in the postseason, they tend to get more physical with you. Obviously, he can put up buckets. He's 7'3", and he can shoot the rock. We get what Porzingis brings to the table when healthy. The reality is, though, because the game slows down and you're allowed a bit more physicality, that usually hinders him in some capacity. That's number one. Number two, again, you don't expect, you can't fix Paul George, but that was an aberration. I don't expect him to hit the side of the backboard again, okay? I still expect him to average over 20. I think his shooting percentage will be better. But Serge Ibaka is an upgrade from Harrell, who I love. Love Harrell. But he's not Serge Ibaka on the defensive side of the ball as a rim protector, and he's certainly not Serge Ibaka in terms of the ability to hit those shots. And you got to remember, because Serge Ibaka can hit those shots, he's a guy that's going to get some of those opportunities that Montrezl Harrell never presented. Third and more important, let's understand this about the game of basketball. If you are not a threat from the perimeter, it allows me as a defense to key even more on the perimeter threats because I don't have to spread my defense but so much. And I'm not compromised because I don't have to worry about Harrell on the perimeter. But I got to worry about Ibaka because not only can Ibaka hit a 15 to 17 foot shot, he can hit threes. And if he can hit threes and he's on the court with a Kawhi Leonard, with a Paul George, with a Lou Williams, I'm sorry. I think that when you look at the Clippers against everybody outside of the Lakers, I definitely believe that the Clippers could easily be the number one threat to the Lakers, especially when you consider the fact this could be Kawhi and Paul George's last year in L.A. with the Clippers. They got a player option after this upcoming season.
Look, I hear your Ibaka point. Him and Morris especially give you power forwards who can shoot the ball and defend. But as I just mentioned, the Mavericks also have power forwards with size who can shoot the ball and defend. And the Mavericks have size, obviously, with Porzingis. And the Mavericks have a superstar who leads in the way that you want Kawhi to lead. You lament the fact that Kawhi doesn't lead the way Luka leads. And, by the way, as opposed to the Clippers, who we know who they have. Kawhi is who he is, and he's great. Paul George is who he is, and he's excellent. They have ascending talent on the Mavericks, and they got better in the offseason.
Defensive talent.
Stephen A., we just saw these
teams play. Defensive talent, not offensively.
Who doesn't have offensive talent?
Dallas. I said they haven't ascended offensively. They've ascended defensively. They lost Seth Curry. That's a big loss,
Matt. Because of Richardson.
They lost Seth Curry. That's a big loss.
I hear you. Because of Richardson, but Richardson does give them defense and enough three to call him a 3-and-D player. Like, he is legit. On this team, Stephen A., you have ascending superstars, and the main thing for me is this. They were my sleeper team last year, right? If insofar as you have a sleeper team in the NBA. I saw a series that the Clippers were lucky to win. They won because the Mavericks weren't healthy. Had the Mavericks been healthy, they'd have beaten the Clippers.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Rockets made a move, signing big man Boogie Cousins to a one-year deal. Cousins telling the Undefeated this yesterday. Boogie missed all of last year due to a torn ACL. Now, with the addition of him, the Rockets lineup should look pretty dangerous this coming season under new head coach Steven Silas. That's if Houston decides not to trade James Harden and Russell Westbrook, though. We know Harden wants out. Two possible landing spots. Philly just acquired Dwight Howard. Brooklyn re-signed Joe Harris, brought in Jeff Green, and Landry Shamet. All right, marinate on that for a second. That was a lot there. Stephen A., based on recent moves, where do you think Harden should want to play?
Brooklyn. First of all, Boogie Cousins, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him only from the standpoint that he's back in the league. He's going to be healthy. We know this is a guy that averaged 28 a game when he was in Sacramento and then New Orleans. We know what he can do when healthy. Last couple of seasons, he's had a string of bad luck, but he can play. I don't know if Houston's the ideal matchup, particularly with James Harden there, considering their style of play. I don't think Boogie fits into that personally. That's just me. But having said all of that, it doesn't matter. If you're James Harden, you need to want to go to Brooklyn for one reason above all else. Your shot at the title. It ain't in Houston. You got no shot. They're not beating the Lakers. They're not beating the Clippers. They probably wouldn't beat Denver or Dallas. That's the way I look at it, okay? And if you, even though Philadelphia would be a possibility and an option, they're still relatively young at certain positions. You're James Harden. I think with what the Lakers have put together in terms of Anthony Davis expected to re-sign, LeBron still being there, Morris still there, then you acquired Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell, okay, and Schroeder. The bottom line is when you look at the Los Angeles Lakers, they are better than they were when they won the championship last month. It's just that simple. And when you look at it from that perspective, what's your best shot to go after them, to assemble a big three, a Kyrie KD with James Harden? Because you're certainly not going to beat them in the interior. You got to bring them outside and destroy them in that fashion, pushing the ball up the court and shooting perimeter shots. That's your only shot to beat this Los Angeles Lakers squad. And there's only one team that could do it. That would be Brooklyn if James Harden were there. Not to mention the fact that, let's call this what it is, Max. Kevin Durant, you know how I feel about him. You know what I think about him. Best in the world. I think he's that lethal. Probably the greatest offensive scorer we've ever seen in our lifetime. Let me be very, very clear with what I'm about to say. He's on the clock. Kevin Durant is on the clock. You were injured last year. We all know that. I believe you'll average 27 in your sleep. We know that. We know what KD can do. But LeBron has reemerged. He actually, instead of being called King James, he is King James because he's the one wearing the crown as we speak. And we all know that before KD went to Golden State, LeBron went to Miami, and LeBron has preceded KD in a lot of moves, and KD wanted to sit up there and find his own juggernaut, got himself back-to-back chips, would have had his own three-peat had he not gotten injured, because Kawhi Leonard and Toronto wouldn't have had a snowball's chance in hell of beating Golden State. But with all of that said, now that Kevin Durant sat out last season, you talking about coming back? You in Brooklyn, New York. This is the Mecca, New York. Okay, I don't give a damn if it's Brooklyn as opposed to Manhattan. It's one of the five boroughs. It's New York, baby. Okay, we expect stuff up in here. And not to say that the Knicks have given us any reason to, because we know better. I'm just talking about that microscopic eye that descends down upon you, monitoring everything you do and what it takes. If you're Kevin Durant with Kyrie and you don't have any kind of championship, at least contention to show for it, you got a problem. And if you James Harden, you certainly need that yourself. James Harden, because of the Lakers, should be trying to get to Brooklyn now more than ever before. And Max, as an aside, I'm hearing nobody's really calling Houston right now about James Harden. Nothing is going on. The Houston Rockets are expecting James Harden to remain in Houston as of this moment. It could change in a matter of hours. You know how this goes. But they're expecting him to stay in Houston because nobody is calling them for James Harden as we speak. Brooklyn needs to change. They need to get on the phone with Houston.
Houston knows they have to trade Harden. They know they're going to trade Harden. If, in fact, they're not getting calls, and that's because no one's going to bite on a Harden trade when they know he's going to go to Brooklyn. And I would love to see him in Brooklyn. Stephen A., I think not only when you say, you don't have to say like Brooklyn's one of the five boroughs, even though it's not Manhattan. Brooklyn rings more bells around the world culturally, you know, as a sexy kind of location than Manhattan does or than any place in New York does. I was born in the Bronx. You're from Queens. But, you know, like there are people named Brooklyn all around the world, right? And that borough is thirsty for a title, for a major league franchise to win a title. Hasn't had one since 1955 with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And New York is thirsty for a title. Hasn't had one since 73 with the Knicks, or if you count the ABA, 76 with the Nets when they were in Long Island. So I'd love to see Harden on the Nets. And I think your point about the Lakers is a very good one. They've reloaded better than last year. Boy, you better be on a super team. But the thing about joining Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, strictly from James Harden's point of view, if the point is to get credit for winning a championship, he ain't going to be the best player on that team. And people are going to say, well, you were supposed to get out of the East. Well, you know, when we measure it up, you know, AD and LeBron and Schroeder is not KD, if he's really KD, if he's recovered, Kyrie and James Harden. Those are two MVPs plus an all-star plus kind of guy. Lakers don't have that. History will forget the details. Well, they had this nice little piece and that nice little piece. They're going to remember the stars on the Nets. Look what Philadelphia did, though. It looks like Daryl Morey is determined to see if Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid can win a title together. He brings in Seth Curry, who you mentioned in the last block, can shoot the lights out. Brings in Danny Green, legit 3-and-D. Like, you know, Richardson is younger, but in terms of a three-point shooter, Danny Green is better. And so it's not – and they have a GM, obviously, in Daryl Morey, who knows what he's doing, right? Like, they were able to get much closer than they ought to have gotten to a title in Houston because of the team that Morey put together. It wasn't the most talented, but the pieces fit the right way, and a coach knew how to use it. Stephen A., let me ask you something. What happens if you swap out Ben Simmons for James Harden with Joel Embiid? Embiid is a beast. Embiid, when he's healthy, is like, who really handles that guy, right? Like, you talk about the interior with AD, and AD is the best big in the game if you consider AD a big. Embiid is right there, just not as consistent, but at his height. That dude is giving you 40 and 15 and playing defense, the whole thing. You put Harden on that team, like not only do they have a fighting chance to get out of the East, but if they win a title, Stephen A., Harden really will have done something. He will not have just joined a super team who's supposed to win. He would have proven something.
Well, you can look at it that way. I mean, you know, because you use the same argument against Kevin Durant. But I will remind you, we still recognize the fact that Kevin Durant is a two-time champion and a two-time league MVP, even though he played with the Splash Brothers and even though some people could try to cast aspersions on it. In the end, here's what it comes down to. Harden and Philadelphia with Embiid, I think, get you to the title round, to the championship round. Harden and Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie could win it all. That's what I'm saying. And because of what the Lakers have done, That's exactly what's going to be required. There is nothing else that's going to stop the Lakers other than the prospect of Harden, Durant, and Kyrie together. Nothing else is going to knock off the Lakers. Nothing.
Stephen A., let's wait till the trade deadline. Daryl Morey's the GM in Philly now.
Okay. Just talk about now.